What's new, listeners? I'm Audra Howell, the host of Two Cents Critic. If you want to mood for reviews of books, movies, and TV shows, then join in. Today, we're not covering any media today on the show, no, because we're talking with CJ Lead, author of Mayfly. And this is her debut novel that goes through some slasher horror and dark comedy territory. Quite a fascinating book for me to dive into last year. And I remember even just finding the book when I first found it, just like the covers really grabbed my eye. And I want to thank my friend Raul, who's actually been on the podcast before as a guest, and she recommended the book to me. And then I just saw the book cover and I was like, oh my god, like this big eyeball and just the whole cover. And then I finally dove into the book itself and I really enjoyed it. So I'm glad to have you on the show, CJ.
Thank you. I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me and thanks for reading it. And yeah, the cover, like, I got so lucky. I think it's amazing. They really killed it.
In general, like book covers, I'm always appreciative of the ones that are just really grab your eye, especially if it grabs your eye in a dark way. You know, whether it's like something like Mayfly, you know, just like something like that. Just like, oh my god, this looks like it's gonna have some twisted, you know, grisly material underneath in the pages.
Yeah, you would think that people would get that off the cover. I would think, yeah. You know, with the eyeball and the licking and all the teeth.
Absolutely. But for any listeners who don't know you, who are tuning in and don't know you, aren't familiar with you, do you just want to give a few words about yourself, a little blurb about yourself?
Sure. This Mayfly is my debut novel, as you said. I live in LA with my boyfriend and a bunch of rescue dogs, and I'm just writing these horror novels.
Yay. And horror, I really enjoy horror as a genre, and I think especially over the past few years I've been able to dive more into this genre.
Well, it's pretty amazing. I mean, horror, you know, like so many people, when I talk to them, they're like, oh, you know, it's horror. I'll never read that. And then, you know, you kind of like ask them, what do they think horror is? And it's always like slashers. And I mean, that's fair. Like my book is a slasher. But I think like horror is this amazing thing where it's a huge umbrella and there are so many genres and subgenres within it. And you can really write about anything. It's like so cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, not even just for books, but for all forms of media, just horror in general. There are so many different subgenres within it, whether you have slasher, of course, which you just, you know, mentioned, that's where Mayfly belongs, but also there's horror comedy, there's super, you know, supernatural horror, psychological horror, yeah. And even just recently, I got a Shudder subscription, so I'm very proud of that. I'm able to view more of the horror content on there. But yeah, just, you know, there are a lot of different areas of horror to explore.
Totally. And grief horror has been really big. And like,
yeah.
What I find just so exciting is seeing the ways in which, you know, because people are afraid of different things, and the ways in which, you know, somebody might take something that you actually don't think is scary at all and then actually like really make you believe it is. Like, you know, Grady Hendrix with the taxidermied squirrel in How to Sell a Haunted House. And now I'm like, yeah, I don't want that thing anywhere near me.
Oh my goodness. Damn. You know, I still need to read that because it looks like it'll be my vibe. Definitely.
Totally. Yeah. It's like puppets and squirrels and carrying Ooh. Hammers. It's amazing.
Yes. And oh, also found footage horror, that's also very popular, and zombie horror. Oh, horror sci-fi, also, that's also a lot of different picks there.
Totally.
Do you have any particular favorite subgenres of horror?
I'm all over the map. I think before I wrote this book, I didn't really read or watch slashers very much, but then I was really lucky. Stephen Graham Jones' book came out, like, you know, right around this time. And it was such an amazing sort of like walkthrough education of like slashers that came before it. So that was really fun to read that and then kind of like go watch things. But, you know what I love is ocean horror. I love ocean horror. Oh. Like anything, like I'm not, I'm not like a super intellectual. Like, give me a big monster in the water and like I'm so happy.
Like Jaws.
Yeah.
Which I still need to watch, by the way. That's a gap in my and my horror watch list for movies. Yeah, Jaws is a gap there.
It's great. There are so many. Crawl, The Meg. I love anything like that.
Oh, yeah, The Meg. I saw that. Yeah. And then I still want to watch The Meg sequel.
Yeah.
And then Crawl. I have not seen that yet.
Lake Placid, back in the day. A great movie.
Lake Placid.
The Abyss.
Oh, The Abyss. Okay. I haven't seen that yet either. In general, I feel like not much ocean horror that I've seen.
It's a lot of good stuff.
Water horror.
Sea Fever is another one. Sea Fever is really good.
Okay, I don't know if I've heard of that one, but like a subgenre, an area to explore more. Stephen Graham Jones, you mentioned him, and I want to give a shout out to The Only Good Indians, which I had a good time with that one. That was definitely a very terrifying book to read. And then My Heart is a Chainsaw. I want to read that. Oh, also Night of the Mannequins. I read that as well, and that was good too.
He's pretty much, he's really like pretty amazing. I feel like he only has great books out.
Yes, yes. Well, let's focus on going back through your life now, because I want to ask you, go back to your life and ask you what you liked when you were a kid.
Oh my gosh, what was I like when I was a kid? I was kind of, I think I was a little bit of a tomboy. I liked like nature stuff. I only child spent a lot of time, like we had like some woods around our house, like kind of trying to catch tadpoles and things like that and lizards. I liked pranking my parents. Yeah, that was kind of being a kid. We always had dogs. So I always like, I grew up with dogs. They were kind of my siblings. And my family was kind of like, they let me watch whatever I wanted to watch. So I think like there were some things like they didn't know I was going to be such like a fearful kid. But like, I think I saw like Tremors and it terrified me and like different things like Mars Attacks. And I think those were probably early like seedings for this. But I've always loved Halloween. I've loved Halloween forever. So that was really fun to talk about in Maeve.
Yeah. Yeah. Halloween, yeah, it's been a while since I have properly gone out to celebrate Halloween, but I always love when it comes around. I always love seeing the costumes.
Yeah, totally.
Dress up in, and the costumes, like especially when it gets so creative too. It's absolutely. Like, damn,
yeah,
love the imagination. I think there was even when they dress up as like a meme, like the Jennifer Lawrence meme from Hot Ones. That was a really good one.
Love it.
And you mentioned pulling pranks on your parents. Are there any specific ones that you can recall? Anything you want to note on?
Pulling pranks? Well, yeah. I did put I think they were fake. I hope it was fake because I like the poor lizards. But I remember putting like, I think they were fake lizards and snakes in my mom's underwear drawer. I think they were fake. I'm just going to say they were. Yeah, my parents are very patient. They still talk to me, so that's nice.
That's good. Little reptiles, hopefully fake reptiles.
Yeah, I think fake. Let's go with that.
And maybe like April Fool's Day, like would you focus on April Fool's Day or just like spread it more throughout?
All the time. Just okay. I like to hide things in the house and leave them for them to find in odd places. And you know, it's like you leave an only child alone, they're gonna get up to something. So that was mine.
Oh, mischievous little human being. And when you were younger, were you writing anything, or did the writing stuff not happen until later on in your life?
The writing didn't come until after college for me. So this was really something that happened like much later. I thought I was going to have a totally different life and career. But I did have my grandfather, since I was a kid, actually always told everyone I was going to be a writer. And I don't know where that came from, but somehow he knew.
Somehow.
Yeah.
And so what was the first thing that you ever wrote? Anything, whether it was a maybe part of a book, whether it was a short story, just anything like that.
I probably wrote, you know, things in school when I was a kid, but, you know, for projects and things. But the first thing I ever, like, really wrote was it was my last semester of undergrad. And I had an elective open, so I did a writing course. And I wrote at the time what I thought was, like, the beginning of a YA novel. And then it's kind of a long story and a lot of strange events, but that novel really changed a million times and over like a decade, and now is actually going to be my second book coming out. So that, I'm very excited about that.
Yay!
Yeah.
Nice. That's nice to hear about that, because I feel like, you know, I think about sometimes like certain manuscripts that I have, like one or two that I have in the drawers and past stages of my life, and it's like, oh, you know, someday it'd be nice to take those up.
Totally.
And,
I think,
you know, rework them.
Yeah.
Looking back on those past manuscripts, it's like, oh, it's kind of cringy. Like, oh, it's like, it's so rough. It's so unpolished here. But someday I'll have the courage.
Or, you know, maybe it's perfect now, or maybe if it's not, then all it needs is just kind of like a repackage, you know? Like, I think I just had to write it like 15 times, and then I was like, oh, that's what this book was trying to be, you know? But it took me like 15 times.
Yeah, so three revisions, I feel, for you, all the different stages. And what books were you reading when you were younger?
So at the time that I wrote that, I mean, I grew up like reading fantasy, mostly sci-fi, all kinds of sci-fi fantasy, YA. I didn't get into romance until I was a little older. I didn't start reading horror until I was in grad school and I was submitting stories. And one of my professors was like, I think you're submitting horror stories. And I was like, no way. I don't even read that stuff. And he was like, no, go like read some Stephen King and like just see. And I was like, oh my God, I've been writing horror stories. So that's when I, in my 20s, I started reading horror too. But and then, you know, like literature and classics. I'm a big Shakespeare fan, but who isn't? So
romance, yeah, that's a genre of books that I hadn't really gotten into until a few years ago, and I'm surprised. I feel like in my own life I would have taken a dive into romance early on, but still, like, I'm glad that I've been able to pick up, you know, read so many books over the past few years. Do you have any particular favorite romance books?
Oh, so many. I mean, this is a cheat because this is romance and horror, but like, I'm a huge Anne Rice fan. As far as like straight romance goes, I mean, I read all kinds of stuff. Like, I read all of Ice Planet Barbarians in like, you know, whatever, a week.
I always know about that series. Haven't read it, but I always know about it.
They're fun. They're wild. If I walked through a romance bookstore with you, like there's one here in LA, I could point out on every shelf things that I love. But there are just so many. I feel like it's funny to say now, but like, I've been a Sarah J. Maas fan for years, like way before all this TikTok stuff, but I'm happy that she's blown up. But yeah, her books are amazing. There's so much good stuff from back in the day, like Jacqueline Carey, Jean Owl. There are people who've just been doing this forever who are like so amazing.
Tons of romance out there. Tons of romance.
Yeah.
Even aside from like, you know, a standard rom-com, there's also historical romance as well. Lots of those. But I haven't read as many of those as I want to. But I've read some. They can be quite fun.
These days, there's kind of a thing happening where like there are subgenres in which it almost feels like the wilder the better kind of situation. So like the craziest possible thing you can come up with and then putting that in a romance novel. And I've been seeing so much of that. And it's really like, it's hilarious and amazing what people can do. I haven't
jump out of the box.
Yeah, exactly.
And while embarking on your writing journey, can you recall any moments where, you know, maybe you flopped up, maybe you look back on certain parts and you're like, I wish I hadn't done that, like, you know, maybe written that, like, I don't know, messed up in this way, but you can learn from these mistakes any moments like
oh
that?
Oh my gosh, probably so many. probably like a million. I mean, I definitely know early on when I was submitting my first book the first time. I mean, I think I did so many things wrong. And I think I mean, I'm sure I half the time, you know, I do these podcasts and events and I'm like, oh my God, what did I just say? So I think that's just, you know?
Yeah, I get you. Especially because looking back on sending out the manuscripts and my own, you know, attempts at writing. And then it's like, oh dear, why did I send my manuscript out in that form when it was that rough? Did I address the agents and publishers and literary agents in the correct fashion? I don't know. There were some people, though, who were like, hey, we reject this, but you're welcome to send us more material, which, you know, that was always nice to hear, basically, and invite to come back, you know, send more stuff. But still, stressful to think about that.
Well, my feeling is that things kind of just happen in the right moment, you know? So I was sending books out for 7 years before I even got an agent. So, and that was 3 books I had written. So I think that's really like fast, honestly, for this industry. Like I tell people that and they're like, oh, only 7, you know, it's really like, it's a wild place, but it takes one person to say yes, as cliche as that sounds.
Cliche, but true.
Yeah.
Cliche, but true. Any tips you can offer, aside from what you just said, any other tips you can offer to aspiring writers out there?
Two things. I would say one is like, just if you want it, just don't stop writing. You know, like it's amazing. Somebody who ended up kind of passing on a book that I sent him 1 year, years later, I sent him another book and he was like, oh, I remember your first book. I didn't pass on that, did I? You know, it was like, you never know. So just keep at it. And then the other thing I would say is like, don't be afraid. This is hard to do. I struggled with this, but I would say like, don't be afraid to anybody who feels like an aspiring writer. Like you are a writer. If you're writing, you're a writer. Like, don't be afraid to call yourself a writer. Like you don't have to be published to be a writer. You don't have to have gone to school for writing to be a writer. Like you just have to be writing. And that's more than a lot of people are doing, even who did go to school for writing, you know? So there's a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, because I use the wording aspiring, and I feel like there are times when I'm like, oh, wait, I should try to click that out. Click that wording out of my vocabulary, writer.
But I get it. I used to do that. I was like, I'm trying to be a writer, you know? But like, I said that for like 7 years when I was writing, you know? So I think it's an interesting thing. But publishing really is like, it's awesome. But, you know, if you're putting words on the page, that is really what matters.
It is important, yes. Now let's shift things over more specifically to Mayfly, which, again, I have lots of love for. And this book takes quite a bit of inspiration from American Psycho. And American Psycho, I'm curious as to what motivated you to focus on that specifically as an inspirational launch pad of sorts.
I think there was like an interesting moment in when I was leaving my MFA and kind of like the discourse I was seeing and participating in regarding like the kind of literature that we felt did and didn't have a place in our world at this moment in time. And I think I was seeing people kind of discarding a lot of a certain type of literature, like really kind of like dark, unapologetic, masculine, gross, whatever, like kind of stuff written by, you know, like straight white men who are still here or not here anymore. And I think my feeling has always kind of been like, it's a beautiful thing. We need to have more voices heard. And I'm so thrilled that that's happening. I hope it keeps happening even more. I think we all hope that and want that. And at the same time, I think we can look at books that already exist and go, yeah, but that book rocks. And we can still say that book rocks, you know? And I think that's like both things can exist at once. And instead of throwing something away like American Psycho, I just wanted to see myself in it. You know, like I wanted to celebrate what he did, but get to like have a version that, you know, I could participate in a little bit more. So that was kind of like what started the whole thing. And same thing with Story of the Eye, Notes from Underground. Like, these were books that people were rolling their eyes in the MFA when they came up. And I was like, but what if, you know, what if there was just a version where, like, somebody else, you know, and I'm a straight white woman, but, like, anybody could do it. Like, and just to see themselves, you know, in some of this kind of work that we all grew up reading.
Yeah, because I think especially something that I focus on is that when it comes to fictional media, that it focuses on a protagonist who's murderous, who has an awful moral compass, who's just terrible as a person. And I feel like those kind of protagonists, you often see them depicted as men, whether it's you know, Patrick Bateman, whether it's Travis Bickle, whether it's Joe Goldberg.
Yeah.
I don't feel like you get to see women take that spot, particularly popular spots. Like, I'm talking about popular figures. You don't get to see women take that spot. I feel like maybe, and I haven't seen Killing Eve, but I want to, it's on my watch list, but I feel like...
It's really good.
I feel like Villanelle might be a good candidate for that. But yeah, just, so that's frustrating. That's frustrating to see.
Yeah, well, and there's you know, like Ty West trilogy with Pearl. And by the way, I think I just said like straight white men. I mean, Brett is, I don't think Brett's straight. But whatever I said, you know, I think like the point just being it's cool to get to see a woman, as you're now saying, like in these roles. But yeah, Pearl and X and all those movies. I'm seeing it more in movies. I'm seeing it more in books now, too. I think, like, a few other kind of, like, slashery female books came out. I haven't read Boy Parts yet. I've heard it's really good. Kill for Love. There are just, like, a bunch of them. So it's, I think, A Certain Hunger. It's exciting. It feels like things are, you know, people like a monstrous woman these days.
Yeah. A Certain Hunger. I still need to read that.
It's really good.
Okay, I did want to double check this. Okay, so Bret Easton Ellis, apparently, when asked in an interview in 2002 whether he was gay, Ellis explained that he did not identify as gay or straight, but was comfortable being thought of as homosexual, bisexual, or heterosexual, and enjoyed playing with his persona, and described his own sexuality in different ways to different interviewers over the years, but most recently has referred to himself as gay.
There you go. So I stand corrected and I apologize. And yeah, definitely don't want to misidentify anybody. But yeah, no matter what, huge fan. Great guy. You know, great book.
So I haven't read the book, but you have?
American Psycho?
Yes. I haven't read the book.
Oh, but my God.
I want to someday.
I've read all of his books except White, which I think is like a different kind of thing. I don't really know much about it, but yeah, like Rules of Attraction, Lunar Park is actually my favorite. The Shards that just came out is so good. Less Than Zero. But yeah, I think American Psycho, it's like a super unrelenting book. It's long, it's brutal, it's pretty amazing, though. I think he created a pretty singular, iconic character who's not going to be forgotten, hopefully ever.
I don't think so. No. I will read it someday. But the movie, though, now the movie, I have seen that. And do you have a preference between the two? Or do you love them both?
I love them both. They're like pretty different. But I think they're both amazing. And they both really capture the same feeling. And I think that is what matters, you know, with Patrick Bateman and his story. Like, it's just, I also think Mary Harron's film version really carried through, like, Brett's, I would imagine what he wanted to come through. I hope what he wanted to come through, because it felt like totally the same spirit as reading the book, which was really cool.
Nice, yeah. I'm going to have to rewatch the movie someday, because I saw it a few years ago. And initially, I actually did not like the movie, because when I initially came away from it, I was just like, oh, like, I couldn't stand, like, the yuppie energy. It's so slick, so vain, arrogant all over the character.
Oh, yeah.
But then, as time went on, I was like, okay, the movie's actually pretty good. Wait, I actually think it was pretty compelling. And now it's like, okay, I gotta rewatch it someday to reassess it fully, refresh my thoughts on it. And I also think, just in general, like, diving into more media, watching more movies, has also helped me to flesh out my perspective on the movie and on Patrick Bateman. You know, again, rewatch it someday and also read the book.
Yeah, they're great. They're always there, you know?
Yes. And Maeve, the character, just like such a fascinating character. The murder and but also some endearing elements too.
She loves the thing she loves, and that was really important to me. Like, I wanted to have a character who really loved things. And so, you know, she loves Halloween, she loves her best friend, she loves her grandmother, she loves her routine and Los Angeles, and she loves music, she loves certain types of books, she loves the bar she always goes to. And it's when she perceives that these things might be kind of slipping out of her grasp that she kind of, you know, loses it a bit, I would say.
Yes. Especially, like, as the book, and I won't give away spoilers, but as the book, like, takes a turn towards the end, and it's like, oh, damn, like, I was not expecting that. And then it's like, oh, some emotions are being stirred towards the end here. My heart. Oh. And now it's like, oh, could there be a sequel somehow? You know, another book coming up to follow Maeve on more of the exploits.
There might be. Yeah, it's not, we haven't gotten too deep into it yet, but there might be a sequel.
I would love that, you know. Keep an eye on that.
Thank you.
And were there any other inspirations that Mayfly, that he grew from for Mayfly, or was it mainly American Psycho?
It was American Psycho, it was Fight Club, Notes from Underground, Story of the Eye. Those were the main ones.
And you also had a playlist as well. You made a playlist.
Yeah.
For the book. It was fascinating to go through the playlist, and it has things like the Twilight Zone theme, Ghost Town by The Specials, Gloomy Sunday by Billie Holiday, just a lot of songs here. So what was happening while you were making this playlist, and just how were you picking out these songs here?
All of them, most of these songs, they all have to do with either Halloween or like losing something or someone. And I think that was kind of the feeling I wanted for this book. You know, I mean, she's so afraid of like people slipping away from her. So that was part of it. And also I just knew that, I don't know, I couldn't tell you where the Halloween music thing came from, but I just knew that had to be part of the book. And I had a really good time putting it all together. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. I especially enjoy Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
Isn't it so
fun? Being part of the... It is. It's hilarious. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I definitely have love for that showing up here in this playlist.
I'm so glad. I think Werewolf Bar Mitzvah is like one of the funniest skits of all time.
Yes. I mean, I just remember like first being exposed to that years and years ago. And then as time's gone on, I've just become more accustomed to it, just like as a part of the meme world. And it's just like, it still gets laughs out of me. I don't get tired of it.
I love that. Yeah, same.
The songs here in general just add on a very suitable tone for the horror, for the dark comedy and the book. And The Purple People Eater by Chef Woolley also called out that one.
It's a great one. It's a pop.
And do you have a playlist for your next book? Did you make one for that book?
I do. Yeah, I've got a playlist. I'll release it right before the book comes out. I've got one for my third book in the works. Yeah, I think that'll be consistent for everything.
Nice. Yeah, I always enjoy that, because I feel like, you know, when you're writing, tuning into music, it can set up the right mood. So I always enjoy hearing about authors who do that. You know, they release the playlists. It sometimes gets very specific too. Like, it's sometimes not just for books, but like, oh, here's a playlist I made while I was writing from this character's perspective. I really enjoy that.
I love that. How cool. Yeah.
So your next book is American Rapture, and that is apparently an apocalyptic tale that's been promoted as a cross between American Gods and The Last of Us. Which that certainly grabs me.
I'm glad. Good. It's American Rapture is it's like a Midwestern book, and it's about a very sheltered Catholic girl who comes into her sexual awakening at the same time as like the world kind of explodes with this pandemic that is sexually spread. And she has to cross the state to get to her brother, and everybody is like basically rabid sex zombies. it's a lot about like guilt and sin and shame and desire and all these questions. And it's kind of a retelling of it's very inspired by Dante's Inferno and Second Circle of Hell, which is the lust circle. So there's lots of wind. Yes. That's kind of the vibe.
Sounds enthralling. Yes, yes. Now I want to know, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I'm all about plotting ahead of time. So usually I have an idea for a book. I let it kind of percolate and then I sit down and like Maeve, I think I plot it out in like 2 days. So I get the big picture down, and then this book I'm working on now, which will be my third book, I've been working on that plot for like months, but now I'm finally at the just writing stage. But I think that's the only way my brain can work. I could do the other, but then I'll still do the plotting and like redo the whole thing. So
that's good. Yeah. I'm always interested to hear about that because, you know, everyone has their different styles, whether it's plotting, casting, or maybe combining the two. And I feel like sometimes I do tend to lean more towards plotting, but I also, I am inclined to throw in a bit of pantsing as well, just a bit.
That's great. A bit of pantsing is great.
And what about your favorite murderous anti-heroes? What are your favorites? I feel like Patrick Bateman might be part of that group.
Yeah, maybe. Definitely. I feel like there's so many. This actually... I found this to be a hard question to answer because I feel like there are so many I love. But yeah, I mean, he's my top. He's my top always.
Yes, yes, definitely. And kind of running along that same vein, what about favorite unreliable narrators?
It's so funny. I know I'm not like throwing many new things at you, but I think The Underground Man in Notes from Underground, I think, well, actually another unreliable narrator I love is... in Shirley Jackson's We've Always Lived in the Castle. That's my answer for both. We've Always Lived in the Castle. It's a killer little novella.
Ooh. Oh, see, I actually got the audiobook for that. Really? I think it was a couple of years ago. I borrowed it from the library, but then I started it and I got just a bit into it and it was compelling to listen to, but then I just paused and then for some reason, I wasn't able to get back to it. And then it got returned to the library.
Oh, no.
And because it was on Libby. I had it on either Libby or Overdrive, one of the apps. But then it got returned. And then it was like, oh, no. And I was like, I got to get back into it someday just because of that. And it's like, I feel a little guilty, you know? A little guilty.
Well, you shouldn't feel guilty. But it is really good. It's really like... It's a very satisfying book, you know, when you get to the end. Definitely. It's like you definitely walk away going, okay, you know, she's a master.
Has it ever happened to you where you weren't able to like finish a book, whether it was just because of time or maybe you weren't vibing with it or because of time issues? Like,
oh, totally. I try to read like 100 books a year. So that's usually like three a week. So I would say for me, like an audiobook, I'm usually just, I listen to them kind of fast. Otherwise, I can't pay attention. So I usually get through them pretty quickly. But if I'm, for some reason, like not getting through it, sometimes I'll skip to the end, you know, but I always want to read the end of every book because I feel like, I don't know, I just have this feeling like I owe that much to the author no matter what. But mostly I just like reading everything and usually just kind of see things through.
Yeah, definitely. It's the audiobooks. I think as of late, I've been tuning into more audiobooks. I do listen to them faster. But both audiobooks and podcasts, I do turn up speed. just because, like,
you have
you know,
to.
I want to. I understand if, you know, other people listen to the, you know, at the regular old speed. But, you know, just for me personally, I'll speed it up somewhat.
Yeah, totally.
I think also helped because with listening to audiobooks in general, because sometimes I'm not able to sit down and focus on the book and read it, you know, visually on the page. But if I have the audiobook playing, I can do the other activities, just, you know, like washing dishes or just, you know, doing other stuff. And it does help save time.
Totally. I think it's amazing to be able to read while walking, read while cleaning, read while, you know, doing any number of chores is, like, so nice. Audiobooks are amazing.
And what do you think about audiobooks? Like, do you find that there are some books that are better to read on the page than reading on the audiobook, or vice versa?
I think totally. I mean, something like House of Leaves, for example, like anything where, like, people are, you know, playing with form on the page, or I would Tell Me I'm Worthless, that was a Nightfire book that came out, I think, last year. Like, books like that, I think you know, they're better reading them. I've never gotten all the way through Infinite Jest, but the footnotes, you know, I'm told are very important. I actually liked the first half that I read. It's just a very long book. I'll get through it one day. But in general, I don't know. I'm an auditory learner. So, you know, I know people have all kinds of opinions about audiobooks, but I just think a story is a story, and we've been telling them all kinds of ways for all time. So I think it's all legit.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I get frustrated sometimes because I'll see discourse about audiobooks. Like, oh, audiobooks aren't a real form of reading books. And it's like, well, I think they are. I think they're pretty damn valuable, you know?
Totally. I mean, think about it. I mean, for how long have humans told each other stories vocally? It's like, still a story.
Yeah. House of Leaves, by the way, I want to go back to that just a bit because it's on my TBR pile. And even it was actually a guest of mine on the show actually had given that as his good word.
Okay.
And that was, and even my friends, like I have a few other friends who've talked about it. And it always looks very riveting, too interesting to dive into. But, you know, someday, even though it does look kind of intimidating as well.
Yeah, I understand that. I actually, well, I'll tell you, I haven't read it. I have it here. I've opened it a couple times. Oh. It's one of my boyfriend's favorite books of all time. And he was like, you have to read it. Everybody says you have to read it. I totally will. But yeah, I don't know why it's an intimidating book a little bit, but I totally agree with you. So maybe one day you and I will both just go pick it up, and I'm sure we'll love it because everybody says it's like the best book ever.
Yes. I want to get the physical version specifically, yeah, because I feel like the ebook is not going to translate over well to format. Like, you know, you need the physical version specifically.
Totally. And I think it's not even that long. I don't know why it's intimidating. So we can do this. I believe in us.
Yeah. And now I want to ask you about your favorite books, movies, and TV shows. You don't have to pick just one option. You can pick multiple options across all three of the fields.
Okay, Star Trek, always. All the Star Treks, I don't discriminate. I love Midnight Mass, one of Mike Flanagan's shows. I love, it's kind of a bizarre answer, but specifically the prequel series to Yellowstone, not as much Yellowstone, but just the prequels. I really like those a lot. Book wise, I mean, that was books too, right? This is all books,
oh,
TV,
yeah,
shows.
But books, TV shows, movies, yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Movies, I would say like Rocky Horror, Starship, yeah, Troopers, Another Round is one of my favorite movies. And for books, I mean, anything by Anne Rice, anything by Sayaka Murata. She's amazing. I love Mrs. Dalloway. I love Stephen King. I love Stephen Graham Jones. Like, it's just, there are so many books. So many.
So many out there. And Rocky Horror does get a spot on your Mayfly playlist with over, yeah, at the Frankenstein place.
Yep, great song, so, right?
Yep, it got some love here. Yeah, I saw that with a few friends over a Discord watch party. And oh, that was definitely a, yeah, it was a fun time watching this for the first time and getting to jam along with the songs. And Tim Curry, a blast as always.
Amazing. His performance in that, I think he's like just the best.
In general, Tim Curry, I feel like, Clue was also something else to note on for his career also.
Clue was great. Oh, yeah. Well, he had so many. I mean, he's the best. He's the best.
And then, I also want to mention Yellowstone because sometimes I watch this. I feel like I've been saying that a lot this episode. Like, oh, sometimes I watch this on my TBR pile, but...
The prequels are very different. Like, Yellowstone is really about, like, a family defending, you know, their, like, property and home. It's super violent. It's, like, very... It's obviously, like, set today. I like Yellowstone. I think it's fun. But I love the prequels. I think they're, like, something amazing. Yeah, they're just, like, they're about adventure and kind of, like... I don't know. I think something really cool happened with them. There are some funny aspects. Like, there's a lot to be said about those. It's kind of, but those and Midnight Mass and Star Trek are all things that I rewatch. So, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan. Yeah, his work. I need to dive into more of his work. The only things I've seen from him are Dr. Sleep and Hush. Both of which I enjoyed very much.
Oh, really? You haven't seen Haunting of Hill House?
I haven't. And the Discord.
Dr. Sleep is amazing. He did
such yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
That was incredible.
Yeah, I actually, because having read the book and then watching the movie, I was like, oh, yeah, it's like very enjoyable here, very enjoyable. And the Discord server that I'm in, a few of my friends, just absolutely adore Flanagan's work. So I'm always seeing the shadow. About his work, and again on the watch list. But hey, you know what? Hush, and Dr. Sleep definitely give me motivation.
Love that. Yeah, he's amazing.
Now I'm curious: are there any pieces of media out there that you have love for, or it just stick with you somehow, but you find it hard to recommend these pieces of media, TV shows, books, movies to other people?
Maybe the Taylor Sheridan ones I just said, but only because it's gotten like somehow political, but I think it's just, they're good stories. But no, I think I'm very like of the mind that anything you love, you should just love unapologetically. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Cause as you know, right, it's like hard to be an artist in the world. And if somebody loves your work, like, you would just hope they could just love it in an uncomplicated way. So I think that's how I try to approach things.
Yeah. And my friend group, I kind of have like this comedic reputation for being into quote unquote fake movies. Like, oh, how's this movie real? It's such like an off the road kind of movie. And I watch like a lot of fake movies that way. So it's like, you know, if I try to recommend it and it's like, oh, but that looks like a fake movie. And it's like, but come on, it's a good thing I'm trying to recommend here. Let's watch it. You.
That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, I'm very, like, you know, pretty unashamed with my tastes. They're all over the place, too. So I think that's great. I think whatever you love is the best.
Especially because I just, you know, I enjoy going into the dark corners of like of underseen movies specifically, like when it comes to movies. It depends. Sometimes you go into the dark corners, dusty corners, and it's like, oh, sometimes what I watch ends up I'm not clicking with this at all. Other times it's like, oh, I end up loving this. Like, why didn't I come across this earlier? So, hey, you know what? If that gains me the fake movie reputation, then hey, you know what? Might as well grab that. Well,
there you go.
Well, I've been enjoying talking with you, CJ, so much, and we've been going through a lot of different subjects, and now I want to ask you for your good word, and this is what I always have in my show, to ask my guests, hey, you know what, what's your recommendation for a book, a movie, a TV show, podcast, music, anything at all? So, CJ, what is your good word?
My good word this time, I just read two books that can I do two? Is that totally cheating?
Oh, it's great. Okay, you know what? Some guests I have on, like, they'll do multiple multiple items with a good word.
I just read Rachel Harrison's So Thirsty, which is coming out, I think, I don't know, maybe at the end of the summer. It's amazing. It's like Thelma and Louise, but vampires. It's so good. Can't recommend it more highly. And then also I just read Chuck Tingle's Bury Your Gaze. And it's the same. Like, I cannot recommend this enough. I don't even want to talk about what's in that book because it goes to so many places and I don't want to spoil anything. But I think it's truly remarkable. And both those books, since I finished them, I like can't stop thinking about them. And it feels very inspiring to be in the world making art at the same time as these people. It's like really, really cool.
Ooh, okay. I always love hearing about books that are coming up, especially books where you're talking about, like, you know, oh, like, you know, I don't want to talk about the book too much, the premise too much, you know, and keep it a bit secret. I love that.
No, I'm like, everybody go, I don't want to spoil anything, but go read it. You'll love it. It's so good. So good.
Nice. Well, again, I've been enjoying this talk very much with you, CJ, and now you get to promote yourself. Where can people find you online, find your books, all of that?
Thank you. I've had so much fun, too. I mean, honestly, like, I have a website. I need to update it more, but mostly I'm on Instagram, and my second book comes out in October, and I just hope to see as many people as possible, you know, at events and... just thanks for reading.
Yes. And as for my socials, you can find this podcast on Twitter at 2_SenseCritic. You can find my podcast on Instagram at 2SenseCriticPod. And you can follow my personal accounts on Twitter, GoodPod, StoryGraph, Letterboxd, and TikTok at Arthur_Ant18. You can find me on Goodreads at Arthur Howell. If you want to email me, you can reach me at email 2SenseCritic@yahoo.com. You can also check out my blog at 2SenseCritic.com, and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever it's in a podcast, whether it's on Spotify, iTunes, GoodPods, Overcast, all of those services, and make sure you do the ratings and reviews especially, because they really do help to bump us up the charts, spread the podcast to more listeners. And once again, thank you so much, CJ, for joining us here on 2SenseCritic. Such a blast.
Thank you. Great chatting with you.
You're welcome. Until next time, stay healthy and stay strong.